I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time now for Tell Me More's weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for their shape-up this week are author Jimmy Israel, Republican strategist and author Ron Christie, he has a new memoir out, columnist Ruben Navarrete, and Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas. Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
What's up, guys?
Doing good, man.
Friday.
Great.
Wow, long time no RC, man. It's good to have you in the shop, dog.
Thanks, man. And I needed a shape up today, too.
Pablo, mi hermano, por de otra madre. What's up, man? How you living?
Doing well. I'm glad it's Friday.
Odale.
Viernes,
odale. All right, let's keep it moving.
Let me just say, that doesn't quite translate out well, brother.
Yeah, no.
I know. My
hermano de otra madre.
Thank
brother
you,
from
thank
another
you.
Mother. That's right.
Thank you. As opposed to mother, brother for another mother. Got it. All right, so.
Like we said, keeping it moving.
Right. Oh, yes. In other news, it turns out former President George Bush, well, W. Bush, he put himself back in the news. He broke his self-imposed media exile to push his new book. Yeah, I've been there, done that. Stop number one on his Decision Points tour. A one-on-one with Matt Lauer, Michelle.
But did you sell 223,000 copies on its first day?
Not the first
for
day.
For sale. Okay. Now, the book and the interviews come a week after President Obama and the Democrats took, as President Obama called it, a shellacking in the midterm election. So I do wonder if in part, the timing had something to do with that. A lot of people were sort of thinking about politics. But anyway, there have been a couple of headlines from the book. One is, I think the whole question a lot of people have about what the president's view is of some of the decisions he made that were so controversial then and remain so. I did want to play a couple clips. The first is a president reading from the book where he's talking after being assured that Saddam Hussein did have weapons of mass destruction, and with two top military leaders, including Tommy Franks, then the head of U.S. Central Command, and he's talking about invading Iraq. And this is, here it is.
I asked each man two questions. Do you have everything you need to win, and are you comfortable with the strategy? Each commander answered affirmatively. Tommy spoke last. Mr. President, the commanding general said, this force is ready. I turned to Don Rumsfeld. Mr. Secretary, I said, for the peace of the world and the benefit and freedom of the Iraqi people, I hereby give the order to execute Operation Iraqi Freedom. May God bless the troops.
Now, of course, that turned out not to be true, and it turned out just not to be true, that those weapons didn't exist. And so then, you know, NBC's Matt Lauer was asking whether the president has considered apologizing for the decision to go to war upon learning that information was simply incorrect. This is what he had to say.
I mean, apologizing would basically say the decision was a wrong decision. And I don't believe it was a wrong decision.
If you knew then what you know now,
that's right,
you would still go to war in Iraq.
You just don't have the luxury when you're president. I will say, definitely, the world is better off without Saddam Hussein in power, as are 25 million people who now have a chance to live in freedom.
Hmm. Wow.
But that's why you want to hear from him directly. That's really why you want to hear from him directly. So I'd be interested to know what you all think.
Well, thanks for that, Michelle. Well, there are several issues beyond Iraq that helped bring President Bush's approval ratings down. Now, I can think of the financial meltdown and Hurricane Katrina just as two examples. Now, Ruben.
Yo.
I'm thinking of that news conference when Mr. Bush was asked as president if he could make a mistake. And
right.
He
said, give me a minute. I'll think of one.
Didn't
have one ready.
Is that a sign of strength and conviction that some might say a president needs?
Yes. I think
really?
That what – yes. I think that
okay.
We can disagree. Listen, we can disagree with someone, okay, whether it be a Bill Clinton or a George Bush. But when we agree with that person and they're doing something that we want them to do, we want them to be decisive. We don't want someone to agree with us but not be decisive enough to pull the trigger and do something we want them to do. So if we disagree with somebody, let's be clear about why we disagree. What bothers people about George Bush is not that he was decisive. It was that he was decisive in the wrong way about the wrong issues going in the wrong direction. But the quality of being decisive, I have found out after a couple of years of Obama, I like because I miss it because I don't see enough of it
Ooh.
In President Obama.
Ooh.
So decisiveness, let me be clear, is not the problem. It's what you decide to do and where you decide to go that people have a problem with. But they want their decision. They want their president to be somebody who can pull the trigger. Bill Clinton, when he went after the economy, he delivered a great economy for 8 years. That was a he had decisive policies. He didn't sit there and say, on the one hand, on the other hand.
Oh, please. Marjorie Margolis Mezvinsky would beg to differ since she lost her seat after he reversed course on the BTU tax. So, okay. But, you know, but we quibble. So, Jimmy, do you think he should
but
apologize?
We digress.
Jimmy, do you think
no.
Do you think he should apologize?
Well, yeah. Well, yes and no.
Well,
I mean,
that?
He's the president. He's the president. So, I mean, so you want a president that can stand by whatever decision that they've made, you know, but I think he should have said, well, if I had to do it over again, I might have done it differently. That isn't an apology, but it is an acknowledgement that, you know, with more mm-hmm. information
yeah.
comes.
No, that's fair.
You know,
that's fair.
Yeah.
And this is Pablo just jumping in. And I think it's also important to recognize that when a president writes a book like this, I mean, if you listen to the first minute of the audio book, which I did, and which is hilarious and awesome in a lot of the ways you'd expect, he's trying to write a thing that historians will look upon favorably. I mean, this is his side of the tale. So he's not going to hew to the side of, you know, of skepticism of his own actions, I think. He's trying to bolster his own case, his own legacy. And the thing that I came away with this week, watching him on Matt Lauer and then watching The Daily Shows, it was almost a flashback. And you almost forgot how good George W. Bush was to The Daily Show and was to a lot of pundits in America. And I think when you look at how he's going to be remembered, I think that idea of a puppet master or a villain is going to erode. He won't be remembered, you know, as this Nixonian character because of Rumsfeld, because of Rove. He's going to be a guy, a sitcom character almost, and which is saying nothing about his moral complicity, but the idea of him with the malapropisms and all that, you know, the Conway West, you know, he was asked, what would you do instead of the mission accomplished banner? He sort of said, I'd say something like, you know, good going, men and women of the, and then trailed off. I mean, it's kind of the same old George W. Bush, and that's how I think we're going to remember him.
Ron, what do you think? Ron just actually saw the president. He actually just saw him. He was here.
I saw him yesterday, as a matter of fact. And I don't know, fellas. I beg your pardon?
Did you see him at Denny's?
I'm not even going to go there. Look, I saw him yesterday, and one thing in this conversation that I think is so interesting is that I think the president deliberately, and he said this yesterday, stayed out of sight for the last 2 years because he made a promise to the current president of the United States that the last thing that he needed was to hear any criticism, any controversy coming from the 43rd president to the 44th. And that being said, I think he's been very comfortable being off the stage. And from what is in his book and from what I, you know, heard from him say yesterday, there are certainly a number of decisions that he feels that he made a mistake and things that, you know, if he had the opportunity to do it over again, mm-hmm. he would.
Right.
But he said the one thing that you learn being a sitting president of the United States, there's no such thing as a do-over. I mean, we just talked about the mission accomplished banner, and he said, obviously, I wouldn't have done that again. But on the domestic policy front, I think without a doubt, the thing that pains him the most is not only the reaction of the federal and the state and local government to Katrina, but his reaction and the aftermath of Kanye West. That really hurt him, and it really touched him. I saw it yesterday. I've seen it in the interviews this past week or so. And I think that one thing, whether you agree with him or you disagree with him, as Pablo said, A, he's very decisive, and B, he's very comfortable in his own skin. And I think those are admirable right. attributes to have regardless of who you are.
Can I ask, Ron, your take on this? I wonder if in part some of these questions are cultural ones, like depending on – because the political parties have cultures just like, you know, neighborhoods have cultures and communities have cultures. Like this obsession with apologizing for something when you can't undo it. I just have to wonder whether mm-hmm. that's part of like the culture of another party, which is that somehow, you know, that emotional process is yeah. – is necessary. And then also on the Kanye West thing, I'm also wondering whether that's sort of a cultural piece too. It's just why are his personal feelings as more important than the fact that however many people died, which incidentally I think has been forgotten, that mm-hmm. as many white people died in the aftermath yes. of Hurricane Katrina as black people did. And that is something that seems to have been lost in this whole conversation.
Well, again, I think an apology in this sense is not appropriate. I mean, history will decide the legacy of the George W. Bush administration, and any apology that he offers now or doesn't offer will have nothing to do with his legacy. And in the same way, I'm a conservative Republican. I certainly don't want President Obama to apologize for the policies that he's undertaken. I mean, it's not for me to ask the president for his apology. It's for the voters to decide whether or not he is entitled to a second term. So in the same sense that I don't think that folks should be asking Bush to apologize for his decisions, I don't think that the current president should be asked to apologize right or wrong for some of the decisions that he's made.
Just as a point of information, we didn't mention that Ron Christie was an aide in the Bush White House.
The former former deputy assistant to Vice President Cheney and former special assistant to President George W. Bush.
Jimmy, let me
also
make a
quick point.
No, they
weren't at Denny's. Let me just jump in just briefly, Ruben, just say if you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop with Jimmy Israel, Ron Christie, columnist Ruben Navarrete, and Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre. Back to you, Jimmy. Or
thanks,
Ruben.
Michelle.
Jimmy, let me just wrap up on this.
Go ahead, man.
On Iraq, a quick thread here. We have funneled the narrative in the media to be that we went to Iraq because we were looking for weapons of mass destruction. At the time, there were Democrats and Republicans alike who made about a dozen different arguments, 12 different arguments for why you go to Iraq. He had violated, Saddam Hussein had violated, 19 different UN resolutions. There was bipartisan agreement. People like Hillary Clinton and others not only believed he had weapons, but believed the world would be safer without him. So that we have to remember, and I think one of the reasons I didn't like the "you must apologize" routine is that we have forgotten that and we've made it simply about the weapons.
Noted. All right. Okay. President Bush is not the only one to make a comeback this week. My boy Conan O'Brien.
Nice.
He's back as well. This is, of course, after having his Tonight Show gig ripped away from him by Jay Leno earlier this year, Michelle.
Yeah. You got a problem with that?
Well,
I don't know. What do people think? Did anybody watch it?
I did. I saw the first one.
Pablo?
Yeah, I mean, I was a big Conan fan going back to when he had the 12:45, post-Leno slot. And that was, I liked him. I think he's edgier. I think he appeals to the younger demographic, which I am as a part of. And what I think here, though, my question with all the late night stuff and the thing that's going to be, I think, looked back, we talk about legacies, is why people care so much about the time slot, right? I mean, I think so many people these days with DVR, with TiVo, with Hulu, with YouTube, they look at things piecemeal. And the idea of fighting over this territory, whether it's The Tonight Show, whether it's something else, and in that format, too, in the Carsonian old sort of format of a variety show, a talk show, I wonder whether that's going to stand the test of time and whether Conan himself is a relic of that and whether, the next generation. I think New York Magazine actually had a great cover story this week on Jimmy Fallon and how he basically doesn't care about the time slot. He just says as long as it creates internet buzz on Twitter and so forth, that's good enough for me and I'll get the demographic that I want.
Yeah, but Jimmy Fallon isn't funny. Ron likes Jimmy Fallon does not care about good humor.
Oh, come on.
You're gonna have to apologize for that.
My take on Conan, I'm just glad he owns his own show a la Letterman this time out through his company. He owns his own show, so I'm down with
that. He can do his own thing.
Yeah. And also, I was glad to see the masturbating bear make a comeback.
Oh, no.
I wonder how many of his other characters.
No, we don't know. We don't need that there.
That's not a proof word.
The other thing, but there is only one other thing, though, which is the ongoing issue about the diversity in late night. I mean, there was, so George Lopez has been pushed into the later time slot. I take your point, Pablo, but then Monique is still there, but then Wanda Sykes gone.
Magic Johnson, where are you?
I don't know. What is it about? I don't know. Does anybody care that they're just? I mean, since Arsenio, there really hasn't been a person of color who's had any real presence in late night. I don't know. Does anybody care?
Until George Lopez,
said, I like Wanda Sykes.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I don't know. Nobody
bigger
cares.
Fish to fry.
Okay. Bigger fish to fry.
I think I'll concentrate on getting African Americans in the U.S. Senate and call it a day. How about that?
Okay. Well, there you go. Well, one more thing. Before we let you go, can we please talk about the Dallas Cowboys? Ruben, you're in Dallas today. You know they love the Cowboys. having a rough time. America's team
lately,
having a rough time.
It's a tough love this season, I'll tell you. I came from San Diego where they're also having a tough season with the Chargers. And there's a lot of that going around. There's some really good teams out there normally having bad years. Right. And in Dallas, you have this added little dimension to it. You have this wonderful, beautiful, expensive stadium, the best stadium, I think, in the country. And yet, unless you get a winning team, you're going to have trouble at some point filling the seats. Right now, you don't have a problem with that. People go to the stadium, they watch the games and all. But they're struggling, and they just got rid of their coach. And you wonder now whether, you can't replace some of those high-placed players. you got to wonder, is it an owner problem? Is it a player problem? It's the coach who gets fired. So tenure for football coaches in the NFL. You don't lose. You don't win. You're gone.
But let me just go then. Yeah. Pablo, mm-hmm. I mean, is Dallas the team? Now, of course, we're in Washington, so you can take it with a grain, okay? There's that whole traditional rivalry. But this whole America's team thing, who gets to be America's team? Who voted? Who votes for that? What's up with that?
That's a great question.
Raider Nation, baby.
Who
Raider
gets...
Nation.
And the same thing with the Braves. Remember, the Braves are supposed to be America's team for baseball? Yeah, who anointed
who
you?
Who anointed them? Probably. Well, so the Cowboys, the team we love to hate. That's why we're like, reveling in
their distress.
I was going to
say that there's the difference with the Cowboys failing is that there's all this schadenfreude about them failing. I mean, they are the equivalent of the Yankees, a billion-dollar stadium, an owner who – I mean, I talked to him last year, and if I was I was saying this to a couple of friends. If I told him his team was going to be 1-7 in 2010, was going to start 1-7, he'd punch me in the face. I mean, it's the type of guy
who is so prideful
and so entrenched in Dallas and has this image of the team as America's team. I think that's a testament. I mean, I guess the lesson is if you spend enough money, you can call yourself America's team. I mean, he who spends most can apply that label to himself. And the team failing.
I'm sorry. I think it has to do with blondeness. I'm not trying to be mean about it.
So the question now is whether America
wants the label back.
The question now is whether America wants the label back.
Yes.
Pablo, I'm sorry. On the Yankees, we are America's team, okay? Of course, you know I'm a Mets fan, but New York above all, right? You know that.
I'd like to think so at times. I'm, of course, in New York myself. So,
Jimmy, what do you think? Do you care? You don't really even care, do you?
You know, sometimes, if you're going to cook a meal, you got to change the grease. So change is good. change is good.
So many parts of the Cowboys
new head
right now.
We can't wait.
Yeah,
so
many parts of this team stink that it's hard to isolate what's the real problem.
So there's no chance of the Super Bowl being Dallas being in the Super Bowl being played in that new stadium.
God,
that's brand spanking new stadium. Not going to happen. No.
I pegged them for a team that would have gone to the Super Bowl, and now that shows you how smart all sports writers are, I guess.
it comes and goes. I guess there'll be another season. It's going to be a long season, though, here in Dallas, unless they start turning things around, for sure.
Ruben, are we going to have an escort for you out of the studio after we've read?
Well, I just want everybody to know that I didn't say these things. It was Pablo saying these things, and I'm in the studio in Dallas. So thank you, Pablo. I appreciate that. Nothing but love for you.
Pablo, before we let you go, who is your pick for the Super Bowl now that things have changed a lot since the beginning of the
season? I'm going to shift over, stay within the NFC East, and go with the Giants, who SI did pick. Thankfully, I can proudly claim as the number one team in the division. But God knows. I mean, the NFL is the sport of parity and change, and God knows what's going to happen.
Oh, man. Spoken like the poet you are. All right. Pablo Torre is a reporter for Sports Illustrated. He joined us from our studios in New York. Ruben Navarrete is a columnist for the Washington Post Writers Group and CNN.com. He's normally in California, but today he joins us from Dallas. Jimmy Israel is the author of The Denzel Principle, and he was with us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. And with us in Washington, Ron Christie, Republican strategist, former aide to President George W. Bush, and author of a new memoir. And he runs Christie Strategies. He's here with me in our Washington, D.C. studio. Thank you all so much.
Take care, fellas.
Thanks.
Yep.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.